Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air, KLW's weekly radio magazine of the performing arts. I'm your host, David LaTulipe. This week I'll be talking with Bay Area theater artist Lauren English, who directs the unromantic romantic comedy Significant Other at the San Francisco Playhouse through June 15th. From the new production of the musical Mamma Mia at the Hillbarn Theater in Foster City, I'll talk with New York-based actress Meryl Pfeiffer, who plays Donna and was also on the national tour, and with San Jose resident Christine Capsuto-Schulman, who plays Tanya in Mamma Mia at the Hillbarn. Plus, Open Air's regular contributor and critic at large, Peter Robinson, reviews the new movies Red Joan with Judi Dench, the true story of Joan Stanley, who was exposed as the KGB's longest-serving British spy. Also, Wild Nights with Emily, in which Molly Shannon captures the vivacious, irreverent side of writer-poet Emily Dickinson. That's all to come on Open Air. Stay with us. Great Joni Mitchell, and a tune that's used in the play currently at the San Francisco Playhouse, Significant Other, an unorthodox romantic comedy by Joshua Harmon, and starring Kyle Cameron as the soon-to-be 30-something, unhappily single gay man and his friendships with primarily the women around him. The play is directed by my guest, Lauren English, and if that surname sounds familiar as associated with the San Francisco Playhouse, you'd be correct in connecting the dots, as Lauren is the daughter of Bill English and Susie Damolano, the co-founders of the Playhouse. Lauren is quite an artiste in her own right. She is an artistic associate at the Playwrights Festival, where she recently directed musician-slash-resident playwright for the Playwrights Festival, John Burnson's When Lighting the Voids, and most recently directed Good, Better, Best, Bested by Jonathan Spector at the Custom Made Theater Company. She has a number of SF Playhouse directing credits, where she's also been seen on stage and has worked as casting director, additional regional work with the Aurora Theater, Cal Shakes, Word for Word, Marin Theater, Magic Theater, and Marin Shakes, among many others, as well as off-Broadway and in various companies on the Right Coast. Lauren currently works as a freelance theater artist and is the co-founder of the Actors Space, a part-time immersive training program at Counterpulse in Union Square. Such a pleasure to welcome Lauren back to our open airwaves.
Thanks, David. It's always great to see you.
Let me get your mic on properly, though. You can say that again.
Thanks, David. It's always great to see you.
Nice to see you, too. Terrific direction on Significant Other. I had such a pleasure seeing it last night. You should be very pleased.
And I am.
This play, Joshua Harmon's Significant Other, was just done at the Roundabout on Broadway at the Booth Theater recently, as was his recent play, Bad Jews, which is one of the most produced plays in the country as of late, with lots of international productions. So just how did Joshua Harmon get on the SF Playhouse radar?
I think Bad Jews was premiered at the Magic Theater a few years ago. But Significant Other specifically came to us last year when we were considering plays for the season, and this season has quite a lot of edge, and we wanted to find some humor and some lightness. And Joshua wrote this play inspired by a number of things, but one of the feats of the play and one of the things that he loves is that there are three weddings featured on stage. So there's a lot of festivity and a lot of joy and a lot of love in this production that's inherently written into the play. So usually we have that kind of theatricality in our musicals. We wanted to explore that in a straight play, and so that was part of the selection process.
Well, it takes a very strong, charismatic character for the audience to buy into when that character is so dominant throughout a play, and you have that in Kyle Cameron, who returns to the San Francisco Playhouse, where he originated the role of Joe in the world premiere of Trouble Cometh.
That's right. Yeah, I'm a huge Kyle Cameron fan. this was a really interesting casting process. So Dori Jacobs cast it here in the Bay Area, but we also worked with Devin Shackett in New York. We did a national call for the role because we really felt like there was some intersectionality required that we definitely wanted to honor. And we had over 800 submissions.
Oh my gosh.
And typically I watch all the submissions that come in, but with this, it got to the point where we had to sort of start looking for key features right away. But I think that really speaks to what Joshua has done, which is to put, you know, a Jewish gay man in the leading role and giving that voice really to the main stage, which just hasn't happened a lot in the dramatic canon. And so all those who felt like they qualified wanted to be a part of the story, which is a really beautiful thing.
Wow. And so what was that winnowing process like?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's an interesting time for casting because what we try to do as theater artists is to not ask people to identify their identity qualifiers, right? But this is about a young gay man. And so I really wanted to find someone who was a gay identifying man and who could understand the specific journey that on a larger sort of political level is like, how does a young gay man fit into this heteronormative society and idea about love and romance and marriage? Mm-hmm. And Kyle Cameron, who'd worked with us before, submitted the requested audition sides, and then he went ahead on his own and memorized a 2.5-page monologue and submitted that additionally.
Wow.
And, you know, when people go that extra mile to show that they're the right storyteller, it really, you can feel it. You can feel their connection to the material. So he was always my guy, but we did want to see as many people as we could.
Uh-huh. And he does have quite a bit of dialogue and monologue in this play. Some of the other characters, I believe it's a six-person mm-hmm. production. I'll play multiple roles, but it's Kyle is the only one that plays the main character there. So I gave a bit of a tease of the plot line, but give us more of a summary of what's going on in Significant Other.
Right. So the story follows Jordan Berman, who's in his late 20s at the time and has a really close-knit circle of girlfriends, three sort of best friend girlfriends, and they've been friends since college. And over the course of the play, which we've tracked to be about 18 months, 2 years, each one of those girls gets engaged and then gets married, and he's sort of left feeling apart, othered, and distant. He also has this relationship with his grandmother, his bubby, who is played by the one and only Bay Area legend, Joy Carlin.
I was going to say, I was wondering why the grandma character was so good, and then I read my program.
Right.
The one and only Joy Carlin.
She has threatened that this is her last stage performance, so everybody better get over and see her in all her glory. She says this is the most typecast she's ever been as the Jewish grandmother. So it really is sort of this intergenerational conversation about and between young women and how they exist in this heteronormative structure of this conceit of marriage and the expectations that happen.
Sure.
And also the longer conversation around a woman who's in her 80s and how she can be close to a young gay man and still not quite be free of imposing those expectations on him.
Hmm.
So ultimately the arc of the play is, without giving too much away, is how can he escape those pressures, sit with those pressures, exist, and maybe even come to thrive.
Hmm. It's almost like a straight play version of Sondheim's Company in a lot of ways.
Totally. Yeah, although we never got Sondheim to name the sexual identity of the main character.
You know, I think he finally relented and allowed a gay version to go through.
He
with
did,
some
and
changes.
Then he took it back.
Did he really?
Or the estate did? I'm not sure how it worked. There was one scene, right? And yeah, it got pulled. But you're so right, and I think again that speaks to this putting a young gay man in the central narrative role. Mm-hmm. And are we ready for that? And I believe we are now, but were we when Company was released? I'm not sure.
Let me just say, go Mayor Pete.
Right, go Mayor Pete.
Anyway, playwright Joshua Harmon has the setting as now NYC, New York City. And it's kind of sad that this 20-something is still going through this. As a 50-something, I'm kind of disappointed that this kind of angst is still being experienced by young gay men. Mm-hmm. But I guess that plays to the universality of the subject and of finding love, having a longing, having a lusting, which Kyle conveys so convincingly through Joshua's script.
I agree. Yeah, I think it affects us all to varying degrees, you know? I think this idea of what love and marriage looks like affected me when I was in my mid-20s and getting married. I suddenly turned into, like, you know, a little bit of a bridezilla with my Pinterest page and all the like. But how does it affect someone who's maybe not culturally from this country and doesn't relate to those heteronormative structures? How does it relate to someone who is potentially transgender or non-binary or homosexual? How do you fit into this structure?
These are big questions that every generation will have to face.
And I think Josh asks these big questions, but he also lets us celebrate and laugh and be silly and be sexy. And that's what makes it a really exciting piece of theater.
Mm. Well, hats off to you again for the terrific production. And we've got to give some kudos out to the terrific set design crew headed by Jacqueline Scott.
Yes, I'm a huge fan of Jackie. And she's a resident props designer. And has been designing some sets for us the last couple of years. And she has a lot of trust in the imagination of the audience. And so she really encouraged me and encourages her creative teams to work in gestures as opposed to spelling things out. And that really worked right with this piece, which I think has like 17 different locations that we would never be able to bring to full fruition. Mm-hmm. She said, what is the essence of these worlds? Okay, so we need a bar. We need a movie seat. We need a lamplight. She's a genius in that way.
And just, you know, I'm continually impressed with what I see at SF Playhouse with the creative mechanics of the stage work, too. You know, we see things come and go in very creative ways.
Oh, I'm so glad you said that because, you know, in truth, it really is the magical part of the work. I think a set like this and a bigger professional Lort House or on Broadway would have probably, you know, 6 or 7 people backstage pulling the strings and raising the chandeliers. And in fact, we have 2. Maria and Michael are backstage just, you know, by the end of the first act, they're both drenched with sweat. And it's their real devotion and love to making that magic happen that really allows it to come to fruition.
Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about your particular directing style. And who are your mentors? How do you treat your actors? Of course, with respect, and you let them do their own thing. But how do you then guide them and make it this a Lauren English-directed production?
Thanks for that question. I think what I offer, my biggest gift as a director, a leader, and a teacher is that my focus is on creating a safe space. My observation has been through my own work and through others that when artists feel safe and held in a space, that's when the imagination and the impulse really comes to life. So, we did a lot of dancing in this process. We would often start rehearsal by playing music and dancing together and learning in that sort of nonverbal physical space together. And ultimately, the play is about naturalism and is very grounded, but I wanted us to feel free and connected from the beginning. So I'd say that's the way I work. And I learned that from my mentor, Zelda Fishandler, who passed in 2016, but is the mother of regional theater in this country and founded the Actors MFA program at NYU, where I went.
Mm-hmm. Well, you better give a shout out to your mom and dad, too, who I hope were good mentors for you.
I don't mind them at all. yeah, I mean, they, you know, I think I was raised in the theater, and so it is a home to me. And so speaking about the Playhouse is just a love because it's my creative home, but it's also where I get to spend the most time with my family. And they really supported me through this process, and it was a gift to be able to get to do this show on opening night. we sat next to each other and my husband sat next to me, and it just was like, you know, the family's all together getting to lift up this story, and it doesn't really get much better than that.
That's nice. And I'm going to let you extol the virtues of the San Francisco Playhouse, because it's really been a two-way street here at KLW with us, especially here on Open Air, being big cheerleaders of the great work that's done at the San Francisco Playhouse. And with the Playhouse being quite generous with us when it comes to our fund drives. Now, we are in a fund drive here at KLW, our spring membership campaign. And for a $500 gift to KLW, when you call 800-525-9917, you can get two tickets to any upcoming San Francisco Playhouse show, as well as two drink vouchers. And we only have three of these pairs of vouchers. And that's, again, by calling 800-525-9917 for a $500 gift to this local public radio station, showing your support not only for Open Air, but for everything we do here at KLW. And we have one Flex Pass for a gift of $1,000. We know there's someone out there that would enjoy this, which is good for six tickets in any combination for future shows. Now, you could take five friends to come see Cabaret, which is coming up in June. You could go solo and maybe find your significant other at Significant Other before it closes on the 15th. Or, Lauren, this is a great segue for us to talk about the 2019-20 season of the Playhouse. But before we do, let me give that phone number again, as these passes are only available when you call 800-525-9917. So the 2019-20 season has been announced. You could use this Flex Pass or these pairs of tickets for anything that's coming up either this season or next. And the season, the fall season, will start off with Dance Nation by Claire Barron. What do we know about that?
Oh, I love this play. I think the great thing about this upcoming season is that it's got this female lens, and it starts off with Dance Nation, which is this very fun and different abstracted presentation of the competitive dancing world. It's really an incredibly different piece of theater, very entertaining. It'll be directed by Becca Wolf, who recently directed Weightless, the Kilbane great success that happened in Z-Space. And her work is so imaginative and playful. So it's a really, really fun piece, but it also has a larger conversation, not unlike Significant Other, about how do young girls thrive in this competitive world, not just in the competitive dance world, but in our culture at large.
And that'll be running from the 24th of September through November. The next show is Groundhog Day, with music and lyrics by Tim Minchin and a book by Danny Rubin.
Yeah, I mean, here's the great thing about this musical and about the musicals that we do in general. We almost always now have one during the holiday season and then again during the summer, is that we value the aesthetic of musical theater very much, but we're also looking for great stories. And for those of you who remember seeing, you know, Groundhog Day with Bill Murray, this is that story, but it's also set with this incredible score. It was a great hit on Broadway, and we're really excited to bring it to the Bay Area. Fun for the whole family, and maybe a little bit more for the adults, but I think kids can come along. I'm bringing my three-year-old. Try to stop me.
And I'm looking forward to discovering that the musical version of that. It should be fascinating. And again, for a $500 gift to KLW, when you call 800-525-9917, maybe Groundhog Day is the tickets that you'd like to use. $1,000 Flex Pass, you can go to see Groundhog, as you can see the whole season, which then continues with Tiny Beautiful Things in January of next year.
Oh my God, I'm so excited about this piece. So Tiny Beautiful Things is the play version inspired by the book written by the journalist Cheryl Strayed, who had a really famous podcast for years. I don't know if you heard that. It's called Dear Sugar. And she's just a brilliant, hilarious columnist who gives really straight, sometimes a little sexy and sometimes fun feedback to her callers. So this is a piece that really embodies that. She also wrote the novel, which was made into the film Wild, starring Reese Witherspoon.
Oh, wow. Neat. And after that, in March, Real Women Have Curves. A provocative title.
Yeah. Well, real women do have curves, David.
Well, so do men. All right.
True that. This is a story about a first-generation Mexican-American girl and her passage into womanhood. And it's giving a chance to have a young woman in a leading role, again, first-generation Mexican-American, in her voice. It's really exciting.
Mm-hmm. Sarah Rule is the playwright for The Clean House in May.
I love this play. And this is Sarah's earlier play written in 2006. And I believe it's our third time producing Sarah Rule.
I was going to say, I've seen some of her
stuff. And it's just, you know, she's such this sort of fantastical realism that she writes in. So it's a straight play. It explores some really big themes on love and life and death. But like all of her plays, it's got some magic in it. And so it's one that always touches my heart and makes me laugh when I read it.
Mm-hmm. Before we go with the finale of the season, I'm going to ask you, what is on your directing or acting plate these days after this?
Well, thanks for asking. I'm actually going to put on my actor hat this summer, which I'm excited about. I'm going to be doing the Bay Area premiere of Cry It Out by Molly Smith Metzler, and that will be through Just Theater Company. And it is a part of my personal artistic mission right now. It's a play about young mothers. So for me, the next wave of the female narrative is putting mom center stage.
Well, there you go. We'll have to have you on to talk about that.
Thank you.
The San Francisco Playhouse concludes its 2019-20 season with a show that I am so looking forward to. The one and only fully staged version of Stephen Sondheim's Follies, which hasn't been fully staged, I think, ever in the Bay Area, I understand.
Yeah, I don't think so. You know, Bill and I saw it in New York, the last version that was done with Bernadette in the older role.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it just pulled on his heartstrings. He's such a Sondheim fan. And so he's working his way through the canon, and there it is. It's time to do it. Yeah. And I think it'll be a really wonderful treat for our audience.
Yeah, there was a semi-staged concert version that was done locally recently, mm-hmm. and it just reignited all of the wonderful book and music that's in that show. And once again, you could use your Flex Pass or your two-ticket voucher for Follies. Save it for that when you give a $500 gift to KLW when you call 800-525-9917. That $500 gift gets you two tickets to any upcoming San Francisco Playhouse show. It could be this season or next. As I mentioned, Cabaret's coming in June. I'm looking forward to that as well. As well as two drink vouchers. And we only have three of these pairs of vouchers. So call now to grab one. 800-525-9917. And we have one Flex Pass, a very generous gift from the San Francisco Playhouse, for a gift to KLW of $1,000, which is good for six tickets in any combination for future shows. As I said, you could take five friends to Follies, perhaps, or use them all yourself and enjoy those six tickets in any combination. 800-525-9917. Maybe find your significant other at Significant Other, which closes on 6:15. Lauren, thanks so much for taking some time today to talk about everything San Francisco Playhouse. You're family to us, and we hope that it's reciprocated.
Absolutely. It's always a pleasure to see you, and thank you for all you do for the arts. And I'm going to get off here and make my own pledge to KLW.
Thank you so much, Lauren. 800-525-9917. Become a member of the KALW family as well as the San Francisco Playhouse family. As you heard, it's a very family-oriented operation in a beautiful setting above the Kensington Hotel. It's a really intimate theater that I know you'll enjoy. As I mentioned, the season of San Francisco Playhouse ends with Follies next September, getting goosebumps just thinking about it. So let's go out with the great Carol Burnett, singing I'm Still Here from the classic stage, unstaged version that was done at Avery Fisher Hall some time ago. Follies, I'm Still Here. We're Still Here for You is, well, at KLW.
I've been through Reno, I've been through Beverly Hills, and I'm here. Reefers and vino, rescuers, religion and pills. I'm here. Been called a pinko, commie tool. Got through it stinko by my pool. I should have gone to an acting school, that seems clear. Still, someone said she's sincere. So I'm here. Day it goes into hock, but I'm here. Top billing Monday, Tuesday, you're touring in stock, but I'm here. First you're another slow-eyed vamp, then
career to career. I'm almost through my memoirs, and I'm here. I've gotten through, hey lady, aren't you who's this? Wow, what a looker you were. Or better yet, sorry, I thought you were who's this? Whatever happened to her? Good times and rough times, I've seen them all, and my dear, I'm still here. Plush velvet sometimes, sometimes just pretzels and beer. But I'm here.
Carol Burnett from the concert version of Follies on in New York some time ago. Just an amazing, amazing performance. We're still here as well at KALW. Follies being done by the San Francisco Playhouse. Next season, you could use your Flex Pass for a $1,000 gift to KLW, good for six tickets in any combination. I'd go to Follies six times myself. You could also, for a $500 gift, you can get two tickets to any upcoming San Francisco Playhouse show, as well as two drink vouchers. And again, we only have three pairs of these vouchers. 800-525-9917 for a $500 gift to KALW. And if you a gift of any amount is welcome at KLW.org. But for these vouchers, we do need to make you have you make that phone call, 800-525-9917. Well, from one great musical, we go to another here on KLW, where we travel a bit further south of our fair San Francisco to visit again with the good people from the Hill Barn Theater. Indeed, Hill Barn Theater closes its 2018-19 season with the crowd favorite musical sensation, Mamma Mia, deemed the theatrical equivalent of comfort food by the New York Times. Mamma Mia's performances through May 26, with music and lyrics by ABBA and a book by Katherine Johnson featuring those smash hits from the Swedish rock group, such as Mamma Mia, Dancing Queen, SOS, Money, 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 appropriately for our spring membership drive, and more. Mamma Mia was nominated for 5 Tony Awards and 3 Drama Desk Awards and has been performed in more than 40 countries across 5 continents. And the popular 2008 film adaptation featured Meryl Streep and Pierce Brosnan. And for our discussion this afternoon, we're going to be joined by a couple of members of the cast. Wisconsin native Meryl Pfeiffer, who plays Donna and was on the national tour of the musical, and San Jose actor Christine Capsuto Schulman, who plays Tanya. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Of course. Well, not everyone's seen the musical or the movie, so can we get some sort of a synopsis from one of you?
Oh, who is that? who hasn't seen the movie or the musical?
I'm going to raise my hand here.
Oh, really?
I know the music of ABBA.
Good enough. People, if they don't know the show, they come for the music. Basically, it's set in Greece, and we go to a little taverna owned by Donna, and run by herself and her daughter, Sophie. And basically, Sophie starts the show by revealing to two friends of hers that she has found her dad. She's found three possible dads, and she's going to invite them all, all three of them, to her upcoming wedding without her mother knowing. She found her mom's diary from when her mom was young, and she grew up without knowing her father, obviously. And so, yeah, the show starts with that. And then chaos ensues, really.
And so how are all these incredible Abbatoons joined together?
I mean, rather well, I must say. It's kind of crazy how all these songs were made, you know, by ABBA prior to this show, and all the lyrics, everything sort of fits. Donna's two best friends, Rosie and Tanya, come to the island to sort of help out with the wedding and be moral support. And they sing, you know, Chiquitita and Dancing Queen together. And yeah, it all just works magically.
Anything you want to add to that?
No, it's just funny that, you know, you asked who hasn't seen it, who hasn't had any sort of background with Mamma Mia, and actually I was one of those people. I had heard some of the songs, obviously, like Mamma Mia and Dancing Queen and some Waterloo, but I really came into this show very blindsided in a way because I had never done the show, seen the show, seen the movie, anything, so this was all new for me. But yeah, it is great to, you know, play Tanya and play her little... her little right-hand gal type of thing, and to see Sophie go on this discovery of not only just herself, but finding that missing puzzle piece in her life. And, you know, Meryl does such a great job holding up the power of the show, and everyone else kind of fits into the big puzzle. And, yeah, it's a fun, but also there's a lot of drama in it, too. It's a good balance of comedy and drama as Sophie goes on this adventure for her dad. Mm-hmm.
And so, obviously, one is drawn to the original ABBA tunes for inspiration and style interpretation. Can you really bring much of your own personality into these tunes that are so iconic?
Absolutely.
Oh, sure. I think the beauty of the music is that there's so much that you can interpret. You know, I think the show does a good job with keeping the music true to the original vibe that they were going for. I mean, there's still the iconic background vocals, and all the orchestrations are the same.
Mm-hmm.
So if anything's different, it's sort of the actor portraying the role that's singing the songs. But if anything, it makes it more relatable.
Meryl, Christine, actually, you've got a number of operatic roles under your belt. Now, how does musical theater versus opera, do you have a love of one over the other? Does one give you more freedom over another?
I love this question because I get asked it so much.
Really?
That, yeah, I feel like I've refined my answer so well. I do love both equally. I did start as a musical theater baby, got my first degree in musical theater and dance, and then that just wasn't enough for me. I wanted to be an even better and stronger musician, so I was told by a lot of people, you know, you have a really strong high voice, you should look into opera. And then I just kept going with my education and got another degree in opera, and I keep my feet in both worlds. So it is very strange. It's almost taboo to both sides of the industry where, you know, if you're in musical theater, oh, you sing opera? Oh my gosh, you must be really good. But no, it doesn't necessarily mean that. Or especially in opera, oh, you do musical theater? Oh God, why would you do that? You know, and there's no reason why if you have a solid technique, you can't do both.
Sure, so. And it's amazing now the way things are crossing over. I mean, the operatic opera house productions of Sweeney Todd, for instance, using incredible opera stars that are still have that musical theater.
Absolutely.
It's not like they're Wotan and Brunhilde. They're they're first of all actors, and they're bringing whatever's brought to them their specialty, their craft.
Right.
So what's happening after Mamma Mia then? On which front?
Well, I do have a lot of concert work coming up. I'm scheduled to sing Königin der Nacht, which is Queen of the Night, in Die Zauberflöte, the magic flute, next year with Modesto Opera.
Wow.
So that's a big honkin'. She doesn't actually sing much, but it's a big preparation for that role, which I've actually sung in the past, but I just have to get it back in my throat. But no, a lot of concert work, a possible contract over at Opera San Jose, and, you know, whatever else comes my way.
Mm-hmm. And Meryl, how about on your front? Straight theater, musicals, what's going on?
You know, I usually do musicals, but I love a good straight play. I always want to do more of them. It's just sometimes there are more musicals to sort of audition for, so that you just sort of get in that loop of doing musicals, which I adore. But sometimes it's nice to do a little play and not have to worry about that voice, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. But yeah, I love to do any sort of piece that I can explore more sides of myself and just sort of become better and, you know, embrace the vulnerability.
There you go. And that's what it's all about. Meryl Pfeiffer, who plays Donna... Christine Capsudo-Shulman playing Tanya. Look forward to seeing your interpretations of this iconic musical, Mamma Mia. Thanks for being with us.
Of course.
Dan Demers, the artistic director of the Hill Barn, says that this iconic jukebox musical will make for a feel-good evening of classic songs and ring in the summer season dancing to the hits of ABBA. Does this sound familiar? Hillbarntheater.org for more information. Mamma Mia runs through 26th. Dancing Queen, the ABBA iconic tune, Mamma Mia at the Hill Barn Theater through the 26th of May. A very good afternoon to you. I'm David LaTulipe. Reminder that we are in our membership campaign here at KLW. 800-525 is the number to call. We appreciate a donation of any amount. If you call the number indicated, 800-525-9917, are able to give us a gift of $500. Vouchers to the San Francisco Playhouse can be yours. And for $1,000, a FlexPass. The operator standing by will let you know all about the details of that. With the Yellow Rose of Texas, we bring Peter Robinson on. And tell me why I'm playing Yellow Rose of Texas, Peter.
Well, why indeed? And it's a very smooth transition, David, from Mamma Mia to the Yellow Rose of Texas. But the strange thing about this particular song, it was written in the 1850s. People may not know that because we know the kind of cowboy version and associate with that. And the movie I'm talking about today, Wild Nights, with Emily, about Emily Dickinson, actually has a scene in it, comes towards the early part of the movie, where one of the key actresses, Mabel, is a piano performer. She's invited into Emily Dickinson's house to play music, really to bring some peace and quiet. And the maid slips her a sheet, and she said, "Could you kick off with this?" And of course, this is the Yellow Rose of Texas. So in the middle of a Emily Dickinson movie, suddenly we find we're almost talking country western. Now, this movie, I should add, has a lot of other surprises other than simply the Yellow Rose of Texas, because many people's image, I think, of Emily Dickinson is a painfully shy recluse, a Victorian lady who really didn't leave the house very much. Well, if that's your picture, let me tell you straight away, you are in for a shock. And I think the interesting thing, and it's partly based on research, partly based on fiction, is that Emily Dickinson did have a passionate affair with her sister-in-law, Susan. So when you read the poems of Emily Dickinson, and I've read many of them over the years, and I've interviewed people who've written about her biography, this relationship is not really brought to the forefront. By the 1990s in this country, particularly students and professors down in Southern California did begin to dig into the relationship. So this movie really changes the scene, and it changes the scene into the poems, but also into the meaning behind the poems, and tries to address the question, to whom were the poems addressed? And I think they do a good and, I think, acceptable type of transition from being academic scholarship to real-life Hollywood. In fact, I often thought another name for the movie could have been The Real Housewives of Amherst. And we get into that story quite deeply, and the story develops where the sister-in-law obviously marries Emily Dickinson's brother, and they live in adjacent houses. So to communicate with each other, a lot of notes go back and forth. And that's how we see the development of the relationship. The movie Wild Nights with Emily, I admitted, is part fiction, but certainly good evidence for it to be based on what is a plausible interpretation. Now, some of the key scenes come when the editor of the Atlantic Monthly, a kind of very stuffy type of editor, interviews Emily and wants to find out whether her poems are suitable for his publication. So there is an undercurrent of sexism in the film, where the key characters are the women, but the decision makers and the gatekeepers of publication in the mid-19th century are men. And I think that angle is played out quite well in Wild Nights with Emily. The other key actress, I think, in this film is Mabel Todd. It's played by Amy Schmitz. And she, in her lifetime, has never actually met Emily. She's seen her. But she then goes to the level of getting her poems published. And I should add that there are 1,800 poems, almost 2,000 poems, of which probably only 11 were published in Emily's lifetime. So for people who haven't read her poetry, I think this could be a good movie to introduce you to what she was writing about. Emily Dickinson is played by Molly Shannon, and I think centers at the whole story and certainly dismisses the myth that she indeed was the person who lived upstairs by herself as a matron in a house in the middle of Amherst.
And once again, that's starring Molly Shannon.
Yep. Now, I think just to give you a taste of a piece of Emily Dickinson, I am going to read a very short 8-line poem. It was written in the 1850s, 1860s. It's called "I'm a Nobody, Who Are You?" And what amuses me about the poem, although it was written over a century and a half ago, I think it could be addressed to the president today. "I'm a nobody, who are you? Are you nobody too? Then there's a pair of us. Don't tell, they'd advertise, you know. How dreary to be somebody, how public like a frog, to tell one's name, the lifelong June, to an admiring bog."
Director Madeline Olneck's Wild Nights with Emily, starring Molly Shannon. It's currently playing nearby at the Embarcadero Center, among other places.
And I think, again, just to add, it's a bio movie that makes sense of the poetry. Now, I've been noticing in movie going recently a strong resurgence of movies that introduces to different, often revisionist interpretations of strong women. Last year, I covered Mary Queen of Scots, which kind of did the relationship between Mary Queen of Scots and Elizabeth. Then we moved into The Favourite, where we looked at the court of Queen Anne with another set of relationships. And we've just been talking about Emily Dickinson and Wild Nights. So my second movie this week also has a strong central female character played by Judi Dench, Dame Judi Dench to be precise, and the movie is called Red Joan. It's again based on a true story, quite an extraordinary true story, about a Cambridge spy, and not like the other male Cambridge spies, Maclean, Burgess, Blunt. This female spy was a physicist at Cambridge in 1938, and at that time, the ideologies of fascism and communism were brewing in England, they were brewing in this country, and gradually the physicist, the female physicist, is drawn into what will turn out to be a Soviet Russian-led conspiracy to recruit people who have done work on the nuclear atomic bomb. So that's the setup for the story. And again, like many of the other spies, she was brought in the Cambridge period, so we're talking about 1938 through to about 1944, 1945, but she did not get revealed as a spy until late in the 1980s. And I think an interesting decision made by British intelligence and made by MI5, MI6, was not to bring the case to court. They thought, let it be, accept it was the past, and move on. So this movie explores the motivation. Why would you spy for the Soviets and under what conditions? Well, she believed by equalizing the nuclear war, revealing what the Americans had to what the Russians had or what the Russians could have, was her pitch towards pacifism. It's an interesting thesis. Certainly, Judi Dench plays the role. And early on in the movie, because the movie does have flashbacks, so we move back to Cambridge in the 1930s, and we begin to see the what I call the young Judi Dench. And again, this is an important role. It's played by Sophie Cookson, and you get the contrast between the mid-30s moving to 1980-2000. If you're into spy movies, let me tell you, this does not move at car chase speed. This is a gradual evolution. Some critics have found it difficult, but I think the story needed to evolve in order for you to grasp the depth of character. Highly recommended for anybody who enjoys the world of espionage. The title, Red Joan, and of course Red Joan, is indeed played by Dame Judi Dench.
Judi Dench, indeed. We'll have links to those movies and their reviews at our website for Open Air, KLW at KLW.org. Thank you, Peter.
Thank you, David. Good to be here.
Sure. This is our spring membership campaign here at KLW. 800-525-9917 is the number to call. You can also make your pledge online at kalw.org. It's a time to let us know what you enjoy about KLW. It could be open air. It could not be. It could be some of the many programs that we offer. 800-525-9917. A number of incredible concerts are happening here in the Bay Area over these next several days. I want to just tell you about a couple of them. The San Francisco Symphony has as guest conductor James Gaffigan playing Debussy's La Mer, which we're hearing in the background, as well as Ligeti's Piano Concerto under the direction of Pierre-Laurent Aimard this coming weekend. And also at the San Francisco Contemporary Music Players, they've got concerts on Friday and Saturday under the theme, their Crossroads series, Guerrilla Sounds, Julius Eastman's Legacy. Inspired by Julius Eastman's politically powerful and sonically persuasive work, two major commissions from the SFCMP, one a new work by Sidney Corbett, an American composer living in Germany, and Bay Area composer, pianist, and improviser Myra Melford will feature herself improvising piano soloist with the San Francisco Contemporary Music Players. Also on the concerts, Fernanda Aoki Navarro, L.J. White, and others. That schedule information, sfcmp.org. And also this week, I was very fortunate to see the San Francisco Ballet's return of the Shostakovich Trilogy just through this coming Sunday. It's a co-commission by the San Francisco Ballet and American Ballet Theater that received its world premiere in New York in 2012 and has been reprised a couple of times since then here in San Francisco. Some extremely virtuosic and acerbic choreography by Alexei Ratmansky and conducted by Martin West, with virtuosic piano playing by Mungunchimeg Buryad with trumpeter Adam Luftman for the Piano Concerto No. 1 of Shostakovich. Extremely memorable. And I do have to give a shout out to the principal flute and piccolo player as well, Barbara Chafee and Julie McKenzie, respectively. Here's just a sampling of what they had to go through, and you'll hear a few more times the scherzo movement from Shostakovich's Symphony No. 9. Thank you. the Presto movement from Shostakovich's Symphony No. 9, segueing into the next movement. Not before I let you know that those Shostakovich trilogy works, the Chamber Symphony, Shostakovich's Symphony No. 9, and the First Piano Concerto can be heard at SF Ballet with some extremely creative choreography just through Sunday. sfballet.org for more information. A very good afternoon to you. I'm David LaTulipe. Hope you've been enjoying Open Air this week with a little touch of musical theater and some drama via Shostakovich. I'm joined now by Alice Ferris of our development team to ask for your support for local public radio.
So please give us a call right now at 800-525-9917. Again, 800-525-9917 is the number to call. Or, of course, you can make your contribution securely online at kalw.org. And I think one of the things that I value about public radio is that we have a place for arts and culture on our radio dial, on our program schedule on a regular basis, because a lot of people have argued that, you know, why do we need this stuff anymore? Why do we need all of this cultural programming on public radio nowadays? Because there's so many other ways that people can find out about this stuff. They can go online and find out everything. But I think what we've proven with programs like Open Air is that the one place where you can have extended conversations about the arts and culture is on public radio. Because when you get the stuff online, it could, who knows who posted that stuff? You know, it could be anything from anyone. But when you have a conversation on public radio, you know it's the real deal. You're getting it from direct from the artist. So please give us a call and let us know that you support this programming at 800-525-9917.
Also online at klw.org. Earlier in Open Air, I mentioned some very special gifts if you do make the phone call to 800-525-9917. Our very special friends and family at the San Francisco Playhouse has offered two tickets to any upcoming San Francisco Playhouse show, as well as two drink vouchers. And we only have three pairs of these vouchers for a $500 gift to KLW and a wonderful flex pass. You go to any six tickets to any in any combination for future shows at the Playhouse for a $1,000 gift. You could take five friends to Cabaret. You could use them all to go to Follies in the next year. All kinds of wonderful ways to show your support and become a part of both families of San Francisco Playhouse as well as KALW. 800-525-9917.
And you can call 800-525-9917 right now to take advantage of that. And while that contribution amount may not be in your reach all the time, any contribution will help to make sure that we have the resources available to continue programming like Open Air. So please give us a call once again at 800-525-9917.
That's right. And one of the things that I've really come to enjoy and treasure about KLW is that they give me this form of Open Air, a live hour of radio devoted to the performing arts and artists as unique and culturally relevant as the Beethoven of our times, Mason Bates, who was here last week, conductors, composers, choreographers. We give a big amount of time to dance here on Open Air. And each show is unique. It's not perfectly scripted. You've heard me make mistakes. People make mistakes all the time at KLW. We're very real, and I think that's why people keep tuning to us, because we're not just another polished product. Mm-hmm. We are real. 800-525-9917 to show your support. Thank you, Alice.
Thank you.
We're going to go right to the BBC next, but our phone lines will remain open during this period. 800-525-9917 for your support for local public radio. Online at klw.org.